On today's show, Josh Bass and Marcus Barahal break down the Nets' insane victory over the Indiana Pacers, Caris LeVert's recent surge, and a supersized Mussolanius. Coming up next on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass, in a stellar mood because we are recording this right after the Nets' 106-105 victory against the Indiana Pacers. Some heroics from Spencer Dinwiddie late, Joe Harris. We'll get into all of that. But first, what's more important, I have to introduce my partner in crime, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's going on, man?
Josh, good to be back with you. We both did a couple solos last week, so good to be back on the pod with you.
Yeah, I know. It is good to be back. I like running the pick and roll a lot more than I like ISOing. Mm. Because we're modern guys.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we're no Kyrie, you know, we need the movement to generate those clutch shots, you know.
For sure. It's like a Joe Harris. It's like when Joe Harris runs pick and roll with like Claxton, let's say.
Oof. Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Nice. Well, we'll get into that whole game, but I think we're going to start off today with some Mussolanius items. You know, this is one of our favorite recurring segments. I don't know how the listeners feel about it, but I know you and I really get a kick out on this.
I do. We've had a lot of segments over the last year plus that we've done the podcast together. You know, we had Quick 2 for a while.
Love Quick 2.
You used to have the Grinds My Gears segment with Gavin. Yep. But Mussolanius, I think this one might stick.
It has some staying power, unlike John and Musa.
Yeah, in the rotation.
But the segment does, so he'll live on in our memory if he gets cut or isn't on the team anymore after the season. But a couple Mussolanius items. First one, want to start with, how about KD? And there were some videos posted on Twitter today, him going through drills, cutting, shooting, looked very good. I know I got really excited about this. Shouts to Anthony Puccio for posting that original video. Marcus, is it too early for me just to really kind of be dreaming about how the Nets could look like with KD back in the fold as early as maybe? I know they still say that he's not going to play, but I mean, the way he's looking right now, I think a return kind of mid to late March and seeing if he can give the Nets some juice as they get into the playoffs could be really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they've been very, they haven't given like any details about his recovery, and so all we have are these kind of grainy videos like this one, which was originally posted on Instagram by __Devante__. So not sure who that is, but shout out to you. No clue, really. I did not do research into __Devante__, but hope he's doing well. In terms of KD, I still think it's unlikely that he plays this season just because, like we've talked about, the Nets kind of are what they are this year. They're almost definitely going to make the playoffs, but they're also almost definitely going to be the 7th or 8th seed, looking more like the 7th of late. But regardless, they're going to start the playoffs on the road against either Milwaukee or maybe Toronto. And so there's not a ton of incentive to play KD if he's not ready. But that being said, this video was encouraging. And if he is ready, I would definitely I would want to see him out there, if nothing else, than to build kind of chemistry and rapport with those guys going into the offseason. Like, we talked about how Taurean Prince is one of the guys who, like, a new face who benefits from playing with these like, more established Nets like Caris, Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, Joe Harris, and Kyrie as well. Like, having him miss all the time with the injury, you want to get him more involved in the rotation and get guys to have more of a feel with each other. It's similar with KD. Obviously, he's, like, an incredible all-time talent who can kind of play with anyone, but still more so for the other guys to see how they fit off of him. But I still feel like it's unlikely, but this was an encouraging sign, at least, to see that he's making progress.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, whether he comes back this season or just the start of next season, you know, it's definitely all a very good sign nonetheless, and for sure positive. I think it just gets people's hopes up, myself included, of course, when you see him on the court, and also you see basically everyone in the Nets really struggling. So I don't know. I think I definitely would want to see him play, of course, and it's not like they're rushing him back. And I think you can be super conservative with injuries when things are going well, but this Nets season, you have to say, has really been a huge disappointment, and especially with kind of the team they're throwing out there now and a lot of the performances they're giving. I think any kind of like boost of energy for the fans will be much appreciated.
Yeah, definitely. And if they could make some kind of noise in the playoffs, like they had this huge win against Indiana tonight, which was their first road win against a 500 or better team this season. Like, if they got KD back and they were able to like steal a game or two on the road and like really make some noise in the first round, that would generate even more excitement heading into next season than there already is. And it would kind of reassure people that like, okay, even if he doesn't look like fully back, like KD is going to play and he's going to contribute like at a high level if he were to come back this year.
Definitely. And let's get it, you know, we'll save our second miscellaneous item for the very end, but let's get into that Nets win tonight. This is a game where they kind of a nice lead throughout, more so like 4 to 7 point range. Indiana was always in it. Then Indiana took over late. The Nets couldn't get over the hump. They were continuously down by 2 to 4. They would get it to 2, and then Indiana would score, and just kept happening. But a couple big shots put the Nets over the hump late. Joe Harris hits that big 3, and then Sabonis comes out, bullies DeAndre, is able to get that bucket to put Pacers back up 1 with 10 seconds left. And then Dinwiddie, you know, he has the ISO. You expect him to go to the basket. He takes the contested 2, and it's funny because, Marcus, you had sent me a chart over the weekend that I think it was literally from the exact area he took the shot, that he has the worst field goal percentage in the league in kind of that mid-range long two area on the near side. But he hits that. He cans it with 4 seconds left. Indiana gets one last shot. Air ball. Nice contest from DeAndre Jordan jumping out there. And the Nets escape with a win in a game where they probably shouldn't have won it, considering only shot 40% from the field. They really had to muck it up against Indiana, who is kind of overall, especially with no Kyrie, no KD, a more talented team, but they were able to get the W.
Yeah, you mentioned that shot that Dinwiddie took, and yeah, that's the exact spot on the chart. It was a Kirk Goldsberry graphic on Twitter, which was basically just showing like the worst shooters in every zone this season, and Dinwiddie was the worst guy from that elbow among players who had taken at least 40 shots there. And it's like, it's a tough zone to accurately get, because a lot of those are probably like long floaters and like contested shots that aren't high percentage anyway. But still, like, Dinwiddie mentioned it in his post game interview that like Kenny gets mad when he takes that exact shot in practice. But like in the flow of the game, even though he had only made 3 shots in the first 47 minutes of game action, he still felt the confidence to rise up and take that shot. And yeah, it was a thing of beauty. The confidence to take it is one thing, and then to actually make it over Brogdon, who's a great defender. This was a huge win, especially coming off that loss to Toronto, which was like kind of a moral victory, which like got the Nets talking about like how there are no moral victories, and then this time they got an actual victory, so that was nice.
I know. Just cut out the moral part, an immoral victory. but yeah, I mean, listen, like I get what Kenny's saying, but this like, you have to be able to hit that shot. All of the kind of the top scoring guards in the league can hit that, because especially when things are tight and you're in the last few minutes of a game, you're not always going to be able to get right to the rim or have a 3. And we've seen countless times over the last few years when Spencer does get to the basket and end of games, he has a lot of trouble getting the foul called. So you need to be able to have a mid-range shot. And we get it. It's not going to be the most effective from a points per possession basis. But in close games or in the playoffs, a lot of the reasons why the Nets struggled last year is because they didn't have people that were like kind of able to hit mid-range shots consistently or like willing to take them in games, because especially teams that are more analytics friendly, when you get to a point where the defenses are playing tighter and everyone's kind of up on you and the refs are swallowing the whistle more times than not, you have to be able to make shots, and you're more likely to make that mid-range shot than you are contested 3.
Yeah, it's the kind of shot that Kyrie would take if he was healthy, and I agree about the analytics thing, because like a three-pointer would have a higher points per shot, like you said, but just on pure field goal percentage, which when you're only down by 1 point, that's really all that matters.
Exactly.
Like the points per shot doesn't matter as much. You just need any kind of basket. then at that point, yeah, just anything that's open. And Dinwiddie with that sidestep, kind of like half to the side, half back, he got enough space where he was able to get a good clean look. And yeah, that's like an efficient shot. That's people would not say that that's like an analytically friendly shot, but it's all based on circumstances, all based on situation. And in that situation, that was like a perfectly good shot to take.
For sure, for sure. I mean, what were your other takeaways from this game? I think, like, overall, I'd say Dinwiddie, I thought he played well almost, besides him just bricking every three-pointer. But in terms of him getting to the basket, went to the line 15 times. And then I think in the first quarter, I was actually really impressed with his passing. Got a bunch of nets going early, 4 assists in the first, finished with 11 for the game. If he could actually be able to hit a three, that would have opened up everything for him driving the lane, but he was just bricking those, and then his drives got a little bit more contested. But overall, I actually think he had a pretty solid game.
Yeah, I thought the aggressiveness from the guards was huge. You mentioned 15 free throws for Dinwiddie. That was more than the Pacers had as a team, and it wasn't just him. It was TLC pushing the pace in transition, even like on that one play where he kind of leaked out, and DeAndre got him with the hit-ahead pass, which caused McConnell to have to foul, and the Nets were in the bonus, so that was 2 free throws. Those plays, whether that it was that or Joe Harris getting 3 offensive rebounds, including one that was like really tough down low. He wound up missing the shot, but it was like a really tough rebound on the right block. There's that play. There's Caris LeVert just kind of pounding his way inside. He didn't shoot the ball efficiently, but he was creating things, opening up offensive rebound opportunities. And the Nets had 14 offensive rebounds in this game, which is why they were able to kind of manhandle Indy on the glass, which is not really what they've done in the past. Usually they struggle against guys like Turner and Sabonis, which, mm-hmm. I mean, Sabonis had a triple-double.
Sabonis had a really nice game.
Yeah, he played really well, but, DeAndre Jordan kind of got manhandled by him at times, but, like, as a team, just, like, those backcourt guys playing aggressively within their roles kind of was enough to overcome it as a unit.
Yeah. No, I think, like, It's tough because right now the Nets really only have 2 guys that can create their own shot. And it's kind of exposing a lot of different guys. But, you know, they played well enough tonight. Really, everyone kind of did. Garrett Temple got really hot in the first quarter, banging some threes. Had a really nice defensive play as well. TLC, as you mentioned, getting to the line 6 times, scratching some points there. Joe Harris and Prince combining for 7 of 15 from 3. And I think Joe had some really key shots, obviously. None bigger than that last one. And it wasn't LeVert's finest game, and probably wasn't Dinwiddie's either. But they, I think, between their ability to get offensive rebounds and get to the line 32 times and also hit them, which has been a huge concern for the Nets this year, they were able to overcome Indiana, who shot the ball terribly from 3, but was able to feast inside from 2, mainly behind Sabonis, just kind of bodying both Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, this was a game that the Nets have lost all year. Like, a game where they shoot 40% from the field. Like, they just didn't really have it going from the field, but they were able to get rebounds. They were able to take and make free throws, which has not been a strength this season. And they were able to beat a good team on the road. So it was all things that they, like, haven't done all year. But it finally clicked in this game. They've played well in this recent stretch. They've won 6 of 10. And they've got that Toronto game coming up. The last game before the All-Star break, if they could win that, that would be huge momentum-wise, mm-hmm. just to kind of keep that going into the break.
For sure, for sure. I guess 2 things that I want to address. First is, what were your thoughts on Jarrett Allen's lack of minutes? I thought he actually played well, but he was forsaken at the end of the game for DeAndre Jordan instead.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because I think Kenny stuck with him because the team was playing well. But I also don't think they were necessarily playing well because of DJ. So I think he was like, this group is gelling, like, I'm not going to make any changes. But I think if he had put in Jared Allen, it would have helped defensively, and I don't think it would have done anything really detrimental necessarily. And I think that DJ had a great game, obviously. He grabbed a ton of rebounds. He had 19 in this game. He had a double-double. But I do think defensively he struggled, especially against Sabonis, and like, that play at the end where Sabonis gave Indy the lead with about 10 seconds left, that was like just terrible defense. And I think JA could have gotten a better contest. Yeah, he just kind of like moved
out
of the way.
He was like waiting for him to do like a DHO, so he was just like staying off him, and then Sabonis just gradually backed in, and then he was just 3 feet away and then just laid at it.
Right. It was pretty bad. And like on that last play, Richard Jefferson pointed this out post-game, like, if Sabonis had faked the handoff to Brogdon, Jordan, like, really overcommitted. It wound up working out, but, like, if he had done, like, a fake dribble handoff a la Jared Dudley, he would have had, like, a pretty open mid-range jumper at the buzzer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to, like, think from his prime Clippers years. Like, I always felt that he was overrated as a defender. I don't think his instincts were ever great, but he could make up for it because he did have, like, supreme athleticism, and this is when not every center was kind of that high-flying, like, defensive-minded Miles Turner type. There were more so guys like a Kendrick Perkins, Al Jefferson, guys who were less mobile and more so focused on defending the post, and he was an anomaly, and he was able to erase so many mistakes because of his athleticism. But now he doesn't have that, and it's really showing that his instincts are pretty subpar in a lot of plays.
Yeah, I feel like even though it's like a small ball era right now, there's a lot more threats offensively at the center position, whether that is like dive guys like Capella and Gobert or more versatile guys like Jokic or like a traditional guy like Embiid. Like, there's a lot of centers that can kind of playmake or just like have more offensive awareness, I think, as opposed to those guys you mentioned, like a Kendrick Perkins type.
Yeah, no, there's not many teams out there now who are just trying to, like, they're not trying to do the thing where they play their center for 4 minutes to start the game and then we'll bring someone in who might be more offensive-minded. Like, guys now, you know, teams are so good at exposing whenever there's someone on the court who's not any sort of offensive threat that everyone kind of has someone who can at least put the ball in the basket, whether it's from three or inside and having that vertical spacing role. Every team is throwing someone out there at center who's pretty decent.
Yeah, every team has a good fit. And speaking of fit, Josh, to get fit in 2020, you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton for overpriced fitness equipment. The best way to get in the best shape of your life is with Echelon. You can go to echelonfit.com to discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer a high-quality, at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. Just go to echelonfit.com/LONBA to learn about their limited-time, free Apple iPad, and complete details of this exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. That's echelonfit.com/LONBA. echelonfit.com/LONBA.
Marcus, that was an incredible segue.
Thank you.
Very, very impressive stuff. What do you think of LeVert's kind of fall back down to earth after three stellar games? And maybe we can talk a little bit about the Raptors and his incredible performance there. But tonight was definitely not his finest performance.
Yeah. You mentioned the hot streak he'd been on. I feel like we just talked about recently, I think it was not on the podcast though, it was an in-person talk where he had 29 and it was like a career high tying 29. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we were both stunned that he had never had 30 in a game. And so of course he just had 37 against the Raptors. So that feels better as a career high for him.
Yeah, that's good.
In this game, he was playing aggressively, like I mentioned, which was like the big thing. His shot wasn't falling as much, but he did hit that clutch three, that step back towards the end on the wing, which was nice. He had a couple like good hard drives. He got to the line only three times, but I felt like his activity was there. He was a little sloppy with it. Obviously not his best game, but similar to the whole team, like he kind of came together at the end. He hit that big shot. He held his own defensively. That foul he took at the end, I think, was the right decision.
Very smart.
Not that that's like a, it's not like a play that's going to like, you know, make any highlight reels or anything, but yeah. Oladipo had like a pretty clear path.
Yeah, well, he got beat on going around the screen, so he had to take it.
Yeah, exactly. And just not making that mental mistake, which is something that I feel like either he would have done or like someone on the team would have done when they were playing poorly. Like, to see that executed was nice.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, yeah, I think like with Karras tonight and also his hot streak, there hasn't, I mean, I'd say he's definitely playing with more confidence, but
yeah.
In terms of like where he's shooting the ball, I still really struggle with his actual shot chart because I feel like he's not taking shots from the right places. He's taking a lot of threes, but he's taking a lot of kind of mid-range fallaways, floaters, and I just don't believe in his touch that much. And that's kind of like where it comes for me because like you look at him, he's in his fourth year and he just hasn't gotten a ton better. And yes, he went off for a couple big games, but would we be hyping him up this much if he wasn't kind of a a homegrown guy who the Nets took a chance on after all of his injuries at Michigan and has shown promise throughout the years. But, like, I mean, if he was on the Pacers, I think Jeremy Lamb is just as good as him.
Oh, that's good. You're going to upset some people with that, I feel like.
Well, tell me why I'm wrong.
I think that the shots
are... He can also have big games. Maybe he's not the playmaker he is, but, I mean, still.
Right. Yeah, I think the shots you're talking about in the mid-range, specifically in this game, I think a lot of times they come when he gets a switch against a big man, and I think that part of the positives that come from taking that shot is that it allows either Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan, when matched up with the smaller guy, to kind of get that offensive rebound and the putback. And so, obviously, you want to, like, make every shot you take, but I think that he is just more willing to take that shot, particularly on switches, because he knows that those guys will clean it up, which they did in this game. And I think he does get into trouble kind of forcing that a lot of times, but just being confident enough to take it, I think, is a big step for him. We saw it with Kurucs earlier in the year, too, where just, like, having the confidence is such a key for these role guys on the Nets. Like, when they don't have that, they really don't have anything. And for LeVert, like, as much as a lot of Nets fans don't want to admit it, he is still a role guy. And so I think that even if he's not making those shots, I appreciate him taking them, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's important for him to take them because the Nets don't have anyone else to take shots right now, especially when Dinwiddie's off the court. I mean, LeVert's looked at as a de facto point guard of that second unit as they're being staggered. So I think he's doing some nice stuff now, but, like, how is any of this going to really translate to when Kyrie Irving comes back? Because even though Karis has been playing really well, I still much rather would have Dinwiddie handling the ball than him. Because as we saw tonight, I mean, LeVert has okay vision. You know, when he drives inside and makes a dump off pass to Jared Allen, the wraparound pass, it looks nice. But he had 6 turnovers tonight and 3 assists. Yeah. And Dinwiddie, he's not the perfect passer. No one's ever going to confuse him for Chris Paul or Jason Kidd, but he gets people in the right spots and he can be a little wild and out of control, but generally he keeps his turnovers kind of down.
Yeah, I mean, Dinwiddie's more of a pure point guard. I think the problem with LeVert is that he's an off guard who can't shoot very well. So, like, he does both of the things of the guard position, but neither of them particularly, like, exceptionally. So, you, like, ideally he would be able to knock down more open threes and you could just play him off of these guys. Because, like you said, his vision's good specifically for, like, a non-traditional ball handler, but it's not, like, as good as Dinwiddie's or Kyrie's. So, he needs to make more open shots. I think that his three ball has looked a lot better the last week and a half or so, and I know it's, like, a super small sample size, so we'll see if that continues in the second half, but, like, if that's real, then that's, like, a huge step forward. So, bottom line, I do think that, like, it's too small of a sample because he missed a ton this season, missed a ton last season, which in and of itself is, like, kind of a problem, but at the same time, like, I think that's why there's so much optimism still for him, because even though he has been in the league 4 years, it's not like he's played 75 games for 4 years, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, he is 25.
And yeah.
the injuries are a huge concern for me at this point, which I think it's for everyone. It is for everyone. But, yeah, I mean, he's shooting the three really well this year when you just look at kind of a percentage basis. I think the biggest thing for him will be keeping that up and then getting more respect from the defense, because he doesn't have the driving lanes that most guys who are shooting 40% from three have, because still no one respects his shot because it is a small sample size. And he's the guy that before this year, the scouting report on him was lay off him, don't let him drive, and make him shoot because he's very unreliable.
Yeah, and I feel like also in terms of driving, his athleticism is a lot more lateral and, like, horizontal as opposed to vertical. So that's probably also why he takes so many of those mid-range shots, just because he doesn't have that, like, up-and-down explosiveness when he does drive. He kind of, like, sort of similar to CJ McCollum, will, like, pull back and shoot, like, a half fadeaway. But he doesn't have nearly the touch of, like, a McCollum guy. So, you know.
Yes, we can only hope. okay, last, we're back. It's a miscellaneous sandwich. The last item on the agenda today. Marcus, are you a USA basketball guy? Because the finalists for the Olympics next year, or this year, sorry, in Tokyo, were released 44 players, 3 Nets. Obviously, we have Joe Harris, who He was on the team last year. Trying to think if he got cut at the last time where he played, but no, he actually did play. It wasn't a dream. I can wake myself up from that. And then we have Kyrie, and then, of course, KD. So, thoughts on this, general thoughts on the roster, any surprises? I know I have a few, but curious to hear your take.
Yeah, I mean, the pool is, like, still huge. It's 44 guys, so that partially explains some of the names on here. But, yeah, there's some bad players on here. I don't expect Joe Harris to make the team. Kyrie, I feel like if he wants to play, probably will, just because there's like a lot of Duke ties to Team USA. And then KD, I don't think he'll play. I mean, I don't know. If he like came back for the Nets in March or April, I feel like he still wouldn't play for Team USA, just because like he missed all this time.
Yeah, I don't think the Nets would want him playing. I don't think he would play. But who knows? And it's also like he's Kevin Durant. And 4 years from now, especially if he makes a kind of a close to full return, he'll definitely be qualified enough to play on the 2024 team.
Yeah, he probably won't be like a main guy, but he'll definitely like have a spot, I feel like, as long as he wants one.
Yeah, and on the Duke thing, I don't know. For me, at least, I was thinking like, okay, Coach K is out. You know, now we got Pop, we got Steve Kerr, Jay Wright, Lloyd Pierce. I was like, okay, we can finally get rid of like Plumlee, who it's like,
nope.
This guy just gets grandfathered in every year because he made it once. It's ridiculous. Him, Derek White, still, I get he was there last year. JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, what is this?
Yeah, Dwight, I don't know.
Drummond, still there. A guy that just got traded for John Henson, a second round pick, and I don't even know who else was in that trade.
Not Sekou Doumbouya, tell you that much.
No. And he's there?
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. I remember, I think people
Brandon Knight.
About, like,
this guy got traded for Brandon Knight, and he's on there.
In the year of our Lord 2020, to be traded for Brandon Knight, the ultimate insult.
And Barnes? Oh my god, another guy that's grandfather.
Yeah, Barnes, I was going to say. I remember people like complained about him. Now he's like, compared to some of these guys, he's like, yeah, I'll take Harrison
Barnes. He's pretty, he's still bad.
Yeah, shouldn't make the team, but like he's better than a lot of these guys, I'll say.
Do you have a sleeper guy who you think will make the team?
That's a good question. I haven't like looked. I hope Bam makes the team.
Yeah, he's.
I hope Devin Booker plays just for Twitter's sake, and I want Brandon Ingram there. That's my main guy who I want there.
Really, my guy. I like Brandon.
Who's your guy?
My guy, Jaylen Brown, I think can really make it.
He's been balling out. An all-star. Yeah,
I think he should have made the all-star team over Tatum. He has really been balling out, and I think he's the type of guy that would fit in well in an international system. But I mean, the developments he's made to his offensive game and being able to create his own shot and score have been like, I think it's been underrated and underreported how quick that development has gone.
Yeah, definitely. I think. Because he like came into the league viewed as like more of a defensive guy, that reputation is like kind of held, and he's still a good defender. But yeah, offensively, he's like made a big jump.
For sure. And we have made a big jump in our podcasting, or we hope. But let us know by reviewing us and rating us wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribing, of course, we love to see that. And follow us on Twitter. I am at @JMBess_. Marcus is at @MarcusBarahall, and the podcast is at @LockedOnNets. We'll be back after the Nets' final game before the All-Star break. What a first half of the season it's been. And until next time, be well.
Bye.